Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat. If you want to get in touch with us on Twitter, you can contact us that way as well. Busy show today as we're now just over 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. It's coming fast and furious. We got a few more shows where we're going to break down guys from different schools right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. It'll be LSU today. Jim Kleinpeter, who's covered the team for a long time for NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune down there in New Orleans, will be joining us in a few minutes. But Lance, in the meantime, ESPN put up a couple of mock drafts, so I guess we could talk about that first. But before we do, there was a report yesterday that Jonathan Hankins, with perhaps his first free agent visit officially, heading to the Colts. You do have a lot of cap space and do have a need on defense. So, to me, that's something that could make a little bit of sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it really depends on how these teams view the class of defensive linemen in the upcoming draft, because if you're a team right now and you're thinking about pursuing a free agent, you have to wonder, maybe they just don't think very highly of the defensive lineman, because if I'm in need of that position, I'd probably wait till the draft and take somebody as opposed to spending some money at this point. But, you know, the Colts may have a different view of what they think is out there in terms of this group of prospects.
Absolutely. So we'll see if anything materializes there, or will they continue to, you know, kind of wait and see. Now, a couple things out there. Todd McShay played general manager for NFL teams out there, for each one of the NFL teams with their first three picks. Here are the guys that he picked for the New York Football Giants. Two guys we talked about on yesterday's show from the University of Florida. Jared Davis, the linebacker in round one. He gives him Caleb Brantley, the defensive tackle in round number two. Some people have projected him as a first-round pick, so that's him dropping a little bit further down the line. Again, we talked about those guys yesterday. If you want to go back, we had Mark Long from the AP. You can check out the archive on Giants.com. He does a great job breaking down Florida. And then he is Gerald Everett, someone we'll talk about tomorrow on the show, who plays tight end for South Alabama. So Lance, a couple defensive players, and then one tight end. No offensive linemen in those first three rounds, which I think, to me, is a little bit surprising.
Well, it's surprising, but I think it also goes back to the depth at that position. And if there's not going to be quality on the board at the time that the Giants take, then it makes sense to perhaps pass on that. I mean, outside of the first round, clearly the tackle specifically, and if you were to look at maybe the Giants' need on the offensive line to be the tackle position, I think there is somewhat of a disparity compared to the other positions. And I've said this time and time again, even though the strength of this team right now, the identity of this team is defense, there's nothing wrong with bolstering the depth chart so that you put yourself in a very good position if down the road you lose some players because of free agency, because the key is you want to make sure this nucleus stays intact. You don't want to just flash for a season or two on defense.
Of course, but at the same time, if you can get a Taylor Moten or something like that in round number two, a good tackle, I think that's somebody you look at. And then the other thing, really quick, the NFC East, they had an article up there with all their NFC East insiders, and they broke down of who they would pick for the NFC East teams. And that particular separate quote-unquote mock draft had the Giants going Ryan Ramczyk in round one, Adam Shaheen out of Ashland, that's the Division II tight end in round number two, who a lot of people love. He's 6'6", 279, runs very fast. And then Kareem Hunt, the running back out of Toledo, who I really like in round number three. So those are just three picks that they have kind of cornered for the Giants, and they have other teams as well. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. If you're watching on Twitter, thanks so much for joining us. Go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app, and you can watch the remainder of the show there, including our guest who joins us right now on the phone. That is James Kleinpeter. He covers the LSU Tigers for NOLA.com and the Times-Picayune. He's done it a very long time. And, Jim, we had you a few years ago before the Giants drafted Odell Beckham Jr. You laid down some great knowledge for us, but I bet you even you didn't think he would be quite the player he turned into in the National Football League.
Well, I didn't. You know, his coaches had always spoken so highly of him. But I think he was kept under wraps by that Les Miles offense, and that's why he was never really were allowed to see what he could do. He did have a fine senior year once they got a quarterback. But he got into the NFL, and the NFL was made for him.
Absolutely.
Well, it's funny, Jim, that you brought up the offense maybe holding back some of these players, because I think that's relevant to maybe a theme with some of the prospects. And I know we're going to get to the top ones that are all of a sudden, you know, going to come to the forefront. But I think there's a number of wide receivers, for example, on this team.
Good call.
They've got good size. They've got some good physical attributes, Jim. But, you know, you look at the lack of quarterback play, the lack of a passing game. it seems as if it's hard to evaluate some of these prospects. I mean, how fair of an assessment is that given what LSU has been lacking in the passing game over the last few seasons?
Oh, on the surface, yeah, you can't really look at, you know, their numbers and go by that. But, you know, the NFL is hip to this. They know. They've seen and they all noticed Leonard Fournette when he was there. And Odell was lucky that he didn't play with Fournette because he would have gotten fewer touches, yeah. I'm sure. But Malachi Dupree, for instance, I think the NFL knew about him coming out of high school because they could see the raw talent there, the great length, you know, a knack for going up and high-pointing the ball. You know, he's not really as fast. He didn't run very fast at the combine. He improved his time at Pro Day, but he's got a long. He should have come back. I really think he would have benefited because they would have fed him the ball a lot if he hadn't come out early. Trayvon Doral is a different type of receiver. He also has nice length and size, but you know, he again a guy that was underutilized. And really, he was their alley-oop guy. He was their the guy that would go up and catch the ball before Dupree got there. So you got two guys that have a chance to carve themselves a niche in the league.
Where are you hearing, Jim, where those guys might get targeted in the draft? Are we talking day two guys, or are they going to fall down to day three?
Well, I think Dupree's a day two guy, and yeah, it could be a mid to late second round, and I don't. There's so many good wide receivers, you know, that it might not that might knock him down a little bit, but I don't think he's gonna come into the league ready. But I see him second, late second, maybe or drop into the early third. I think Doral is gonna end up in the fourth round. He doesn't. He's got really nice size. You look at him, and he's got this beautiful, smooth stride. He was a track star, but he's got a long, smooth stride. He's not as much as the burst, and not as much as the short range speed. But he can get behind defensive backs once he gets unfolded, he gets his body unfolded. But he struggles a little more with the shorter stuff and inconsistent with the hands. So he's more of a day three pick.
In terms of Doral, I noticed he has a bit of an injury history, Jim, in terms of a knee injury going back to 2012, hamstring injury in 2015. Any questions about his durability moving forward?
You know, I think that yeah, he had the knee injury as a freshman. He was going to play that year, and he ended up redshirting. And that's really the one that hurt him the most because I think he'd have been gone from LSU after 3 years. But he got flipped up into the air at the end of his junior year. And between that freshman year injury and the one in his junior year 4 years later, he really didn't have a whole lot. So, it might be a little unfair to say he's injury prone. Now, he had a shoulder injury during the season, and I think he missed one game, but that was it. He came back and played. He played hurt in at least one game, I know for sure, when he hurt the shoulder. So I don't know. That remains to be seen, but it was a little bit unfair. But he had a torn hamstring, and I think anybody that comes back, that sounds so painful.
Yeah,
it does. And, and he came back from that, and he looked pretty good last year doing that. But they, like I said, you know, they didn't get him the ball, and they changed the passing offense last year, and it just pretty much took him out. They didn't have much of a long game last year, so that was his strength, and so it kind of hurt him.
Well, and the reason they didn't have a long game is because they're just handing the ball to Leonard Fournette, and who could blame him? He's a beast. I mean, look, we know about the speed, the size, the height, the weight, and all those, you know, physical attributes that he has. Jim, some people question, though, whether or not he can succeed with that bullying run style in the pros when he's going against bigger, faster athletes, and if he'll be as effective. You watched him take all his carries in college. How do you think his running style will project to the NFL level?
Well, the first thing about Leonard is he's very mature, very smart, and he knows who to listen to. Okay. I asked him that exact question. I said, are you ready to accept maybe a coach telling you not to run so physical. And he said, oh, yeah, you know, if they tell me not to run over people, I won't do it. But he said, I want to preserve, you know, my body. I want to, you know, I'll run out of bounds when I have to. I'm not going to take any unnecessary punishment. I think it comes natural to him, and I don't think this will happen right away. I think he'll try to run over some people, and he probably will have some success.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But he's a smart guy, and I think he understands the benefits of being smart and not trying to take on every tackler that squares up on him.
Talk with Jim Kleinpeter, who covers LSU for the New Orleans Times-Picayune. I think when everybody looks at Fournette's game, Jim, we talk about his running style, and despite the fact that LSU did not have a prolific passing game, what about his ability in pass protection and his hands in terms of serving as a receiver? What jumps out to you, or what may be some of the weaknesses there that he needs to work on?
Well, they didn't use him or didn't ask him to catch the ball that much. Now, he did have some drops. But he's a natural athlete. I mean, when you look at the guy and look at his hands, he's got big hands. He can catch the ball when he's made a part of a passing game. He'll get better at it if he needs to get better at it. His pass protection is not as bad. I mean, you don't want him protecting the passer. You want him running the ball, or you want to try to get the ball to him. And even when he's out in a pattern, the defense has to account for him. So Leonard, as a blocker in college, it's almost a waste. Now he knows how to. He was smart. You could see him out there, kind of coaching his teammates. And this is his junior year or his sophomore year. I remember him trying. They had a different fullback in the game, and he was barking at his fullback one time because he missed a block. So Leonard knows what has to be done. He's a fearless guy. I mean, I don't think there's going to be any problem with him learning that. Once it becomes part of the everyday game plan, and it's something that he works on every day. But he's got good hands. I think he showed that at Pro Day. He didn't drop anything at Pro Day.
You know, Jim, and I think you hit it on the head. When you talk about pass protection, you need a guy that's fearless, and I think you used the right word there. I was going to ask you about it until you brought it up. If you're willing to stick your nose in there, and based on his running style, I can't imagine he's not going to be, and you have the will and you're smart enough to do it, there's no reason you can't turn into a very good pass protector as long as the team's asking you to do it.
Yeah, and this comes from his personality, too. He's got an edge to him. He doesn't mess around on the field. He doesn't like it because he took a lot of abuse, little punches in the pileup and twisting of the ankle. You know, he doesn't stand for that. He's an outspoken kid, but he's reserved, and at the same time he's reserved. I mean, he doesn't talk much, but when he does, it's worth listening to. And he's, like I said, he's got that edge, and I think that's going to be a big benefit because I think he's ready for the NFL, and it's going to be a lot more violent and it's going to be a lot tougher, but I think he's ready for that.
This past season, Jim, he was limited because of the ankle injury, and I think that's understandable why his numbers were down, so maybe there's not so much to read into that. But I'm curious, from covering LSU, your perspective, the fact that Ezekiel Elliott went very high last year, and the running back position, if you go based on recent NFL history, you know, it's a position that most teams are like, hey, you know what, maybe we'll settle on a guy in the mid-round because it's an injury-prone position. How much do you think the fact that Fournette's coming out the following year of Ezekiel Elliott and what he did for the Cowboys maybe helps even boost his stock even more, despite whatever his numbers showed in college?
Well, I can only go by I was at the combine, and I was listening to what coaches they were talking about. This was a big subject at the combine. A lot of the coaches were asked about this, and they were in agreement, you know, that, yeah, you know, even though it's a passing league, a running back can be a lot more important when you got the right one. And Fournette is not just any running back. I mean, really, he's extremely talented, and they don't come around like him very much. So if you put him in the right position, and Dallas had a great offensive line, and that probably helped Ezekiel Elliott. He didn't get down on himself. He knew he was going to have the holes, and he had them. And absolutely, I think it's going to there's going to be a resurgence of interest in the running backs, I think, and especially the kind of like Fournette, because there's not too many in the draft like him this year.
Well, Jim, let me tell you, a lot of the people think that the Jaguars at number four are going to take Leonard Fournette, and quite frankly, that would not surprise me. Tom Coughlin was here for a long time. I was in the same building with him since 2007, and he loves big, powerful, downhill running backs, and Coughlin's an old-school guy. He believes in, you know, not overusing guys, but if Fournette wants to go to a team where he's going to get 22 to 27 carries a game and get a chance to grind it out, he should hope the Jaguars take him, because Tom Coughlin will give him that opportunity to control the game on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. I felt exactly the same way. I know they have a contract situation with Chris Ivory over there, though. They just gave him a big contract.
Yeah.
So if you draft Leonard Fournette number one, you're putting a lot of money into one position for two guys. So I don't know how that would work, but otherwise he is like a perfect fit for a team that looks like it has been loading up on defense in the past couple of years, and then in free agency, they signed a bunch of defensive players, so it looks like they want to help their offense now. I don't know how he gets past them unless it becomes this thing with the Chris Ivory contract.
Final one for me. Remember, Tom Coughlin did not sign that Chris Ivory contract, so he'll probably be more willing to give up on him than the guy who did it before. Exactly. Final one for me. Would you be shocked on Fournette specifically before we head over to the other guys? Would you be shocked if he's not the first running back taken? And do you have a player comparison for him? Because I've seen some people say Bo Jackson. I've seen other people kind of go like the Eddie George route. Do you have a good compare for him?
I think the Bo Jackson is best. I don't know about Adrian Peterson.
I've seen that one, too.
Maybe I didn't see Adrian Peterson enough. That's the one that they've been comparing him to Adrian Peterson since high school. And I see more Bo Jackson there, just raw power and straight-ahead speed. He does have some good footwork, maybe a little bit better footwork than Bo Jackson.
Well, the last player of note, I think, Jim, on the offensive side is one of the guys that helped block for Fournette, and that's center Ethan Posick, who I know has had some experience, Jim, also playing guard, and I think he also had experience at tackle, so he's like a jack-of-all-trades type of player.
Yeah.
But where do you see his ideal position at the next level? Is he strictly a center, or is he somebody that I think a team could maybe move him around a bit?
Well, scouts that I've talked to have said guard is probably his best spot. He's 6'6", and I think he loses a little bit on leverage. But he bends his body well for a 6'6 guy, and he's able to stay low. And I think that's why they left him at center. I always thought that they were going to move him to tackle his senior year because he's just built like one. He seems like, and he did fill in at right tackle in a pinch for LSU last year. So, and he even played a little left tackle, but really guard, he does better when he's surrounded, but he's got people on either side of him, I think, because he's a tough guy and he scraps the whole time. So he's going to make it in the NFL.
Yeah, and, you know, to me, Jim, it's funny. I figure, you know, third, fourth round for him, he's one of those guys where, you know, he might not make Pro Bowls, he might not be first-team All-Pro or, you know, things like that. But to me, he can be an 8-year starter in the league, and you could even put him in and probably start him in year one, because it seems like that really smart type of kid that will get plugged in there and not be swimming in the playbook, not knowing what to do when he gets put in there in year number one.
Yeah, he played 4 years in college. He played he didn't redshirt. He entered school early in the spring of his senior year of high school.
Wow!
He played center, and you know what? You get him at guard, and if you have an injury at center, you can slide him over. He could play center, in a pinch. So, you love players like that, and he's smart and just a great all around kid. Comes from a great family, so I think he's got a good future in the league, 8 to 10 years.
Talking with Jim Kleinpeter, who covers LSU for the New Orleans Times-Picayune. Speaking of family ties, there is a player on LSU, Jim, that has ties to the New York Giants, and that is the son of George Adams, who was a member of the 1986 Super Bowl champion Giants team, and that's Jamal Adams, who I think is considered arguably the best safety of what is considered a pretty deep safety group entering this year's draft. I mean, it's hard to find a weakness with respect to at least his football instincts, Jim. What stands out to you specifically, though, about Jamal Adams' play? Is it the fact that he's so effective at the line of scrimmage that he can protect himself and defend tight ends. What is it about his game that really jumps out to you?
Well, he reminds me of Tyrann Mathieu. He's got so much energy. His energy, you can see it on the field, just in the way he carries himself, the way he tackles. No hesitation in his tackling. And, that's something I notice right away about players. He's not timid, and he's not a timid player off the field. He'll jump all over wanting to be a leader. He'll want to lead from the first day he's there. And it's his bloodlines. You know, that comes from his dad. He's just he's a football player. You know, I think you could play him at any position. You could play him on offense, and he'd be a good player. He may not be as good a deep center field safety as Malik Hooker from Ohio State, and that's the balance there. Which kind do you want? Do you want the guy that's a great tackler that plays up at the line of scrimmage who can cover, or do you want the guy that, you know, the guy with the ball skills on the back end? And it's really, you know, six of one, half dozen the other. It just depends on what you want. And I don't know which one's better. I don't know if you can really separate them. But I enjoyed watching Jamal Adams play because he always makes things happen. Just like Tyrann Mathieu, turnovers seem to happen around. So he would make a good player at just about any position.
You know, it's funny. You took my one follow-up on Jamal Adams, so I'm going to go to my second one. You said maybe if he has a weakness, it's playing that sideline to sideline single high safety. But when you play down in the box, Jim, sometimes if teams run play action, you're called on to play man-to-man defense on the tight end. How much was he asked to cover tight ends in college, and how was he when he was asked to do so?
He was good, I don't think last year they didn't ask him to do it that much. LSU played with a 3-4 last year, and so their linebackers a lot of times covered the tight end.
Got it.
But Jamal, you never saw Jamal getting beat, and he didn't get beat one-on-one. He was right there. So, I think he handles tight ends well because he's smart. He knows how to position himself. And that comes from learning, you know, having a father who's a former NFL player, you know, whispering in his ear. He's fearless. You know, he doesn't care even if because he played against a big tight. He played against O.J. Howard. He had to guard O.J. Howard a few times. And Evan Engram. They shut down Evan Engram this past season. I think they held him to one catch for 5 yards. And
wow.
A lot of that was Jamal.
Wow.
So he can handle tight ends. He's aggressive. He's not afraid.
Jim, I think one thing that is overlooked about his game from watching film is his special teams contributions, and it's really a two-part question. How much special teams did he play in the latter stage of his career? Because I believe he was much more effective or much more involved, I should say, as a freshman. And how much has that jumped out to you? Because, I mean, I've seen returns for LSU where he's the one laying out the key block that allows the return man to get some extra leverage up the field.
Yeah, he had one this year where he took out two players, and everybody in the stadium saw it because it was right in the beginning of the punt return. Tre'Davious White was coming up the sideline, and Jamal just exploded into one guy and knocked him into another defender. And he got up, and he was celebrating. He was enjoying it, and they showed it on the replay board. They didn't show the return. They showed his block on the replay board. So he definitely loves to play special teams. That's what I'm saying. This is a football player. He doesn't care what he's doing. He likes to play football in whatever capacity you're asking him. He sprung Tre'Davious White for a touchdown on another punt return. Like I said about the tackling, he loves contact. He loves the big hits. I think you'll see that quickly as he'll be doing that as a rookie.
Well, Jim, you talked about Tre'Davious White in that answer, so I'll make the transition. You mentioned him on special teams as a gunner and as a return man. On defense, I think, in my opinion, he's a sleeper to be the first cornerback taken if people get scared off by Marshawn Lattimore's hamstring injuries. I think there's a shot at that. We've seen a lot of really good cornerbacks come out of LSU. That's a position that you guys grind out like a factory. How does he compare to some of the guys you've seen leave that building over the last decade or so?
Yeah, I don't know how it's hard for me with him. He's not Patrick Peterson. I mean, Patrick Peterson was a freak of a cornerback. He's not Tyrann Mathieu either. And this is the thing. Tre'Davious White watched him last year, and they just didn't – the quarterbacks didn't throw to his side very much. And I think that's one of the reasons you look at his career numbers over 4 years, you see 6 interceptions. It's not real impressive. But when he got his hands on the ball, he picked it off. It's just they didn't throw at him. And he started as a freshman. He has natural cover skills. And they played him in his senior year, they played him at the nickel because of his quickness and, you know, he could do a lot of things. He could he rushed the passer a little bit, but he could guard the slot receiver. So they would slide him onto the slot receiver. And just a real steady, really good at mirroring the wide receiver and staying on him. His tackling, you know, isn't the best, which is why they don't, which is one of the reasons a lot of people don't have him higher up. You know, they have 2 or 3 quarterbacks ahead of him, maybe. The kid from Washington is hurt now, and then maybe Lattimore. But, another kid that's destined for success, just very, very consistent, very good at covering in a passing league. You know, if you can cover a guy for 3 or 4 seconds, you've done your job.
It sounds like you like him more as a man-to-man corner than you do as a zone corner.
Yeah. I think it just those natural skills. I'm gonna tell you something. I hate to say this about him, but he had 3 punt returns for touchdowns. But he made a tremendous amount of mistakes on special teams as far as deciding when to catch the ball.
Okay.
So he may not make it on special teams. Now once he gets clear, he's good. He can, you know, he's got good speed, got good moves. But, you know, maybe they ought to hold off on that as far as the punt return.
Well, that would be something to certainly look into, considering, as we talked about, young guys need to come in and play special teams. Jim, you threw out a few former LSU corners. I mean, Patrick Peterson was the first one that came to mind. I'm curious, Morris Claiborne is similar in height to him. Does that maybe come up when you maybe draw comparisons to how he can project at the next level, or are there not many similarities between him and Claiborne?
Oh, there's a bunch, actually. They're both from Shreveport, Louisiana, and they look like they could be brothers. Morris Claiborne was Tredavious's mentor. Tredavious grew up watching Morris play for LSU, and it was kind of his hero. And, yeah, their games are similar. I think Morris was a little more athletic, though. And Tredavious is just seems to be more consistent. You know, you get the same thing out of him every time. Morris was a little more up and down. He had a really good junior year at LSU and then went on to the NFL after that. But I see, you know, a lot of similarities in the way they play, and maybe a little more consistency out of White.
Well, White would love to get drafted as high as Claiborne did, but he would love to avoid some of the injury problems Morris Claiborne has had since he's headed into the pros. Let's kind of go down a level here and go to the linebacker position. You got a couple linebackers coming out, Duke Riley, Kendall Beckwith. Both guys, I think, are projected kind of as middle-round picks, probably beginning of day 3, middle of day 3. What's your take on those two guys? How do you separate them, and where do you see them fitting in on the pro level?
Oh, shoot. Well, a year ago, you know, I would have said Kendall Beckwith would be maybe a late first, second-round pick. And
wow.
Now he's in the third or fourth range. He's a guy that a nice player. He played quarterback in high school, and he's kind of a thumper, but he doesn't look like an every down linebacker. He looks like a guy, at least in the beginning, you know, he's going to struggle in pass coverage, but great on run defense, really good, and he's a lot faster and a lot more athletic than you would expect out of a 250-pounder. He played at LSU at 250. He's down to about 245. He's already talking about wanting to get down to 240. But he's coming off a knee injury, so I think that's going to hurt him. Riley is going in the other direction. He's a clone of Deion Jones, the guy that played for LSU and then had a really great rookie year for the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah.
And Duke moved into his spot and he didn't start for 3 years, just like Deion Jones, and then had a great senior year. And really fast, good speed. He had the best 40 time at the combine among linebackers, and they that doesn't count Jabril Peppers, who really isn't a linebacker; he's a safety.
Right.
They had him listed as a linebacker, and he was faster. But Duke is a really good player, loves football, and he's coming up. And most of the scouts I've talked to look at him as a clone of Deion Jones, same type of player, good speed. And he was good in pass coverage. He really that was where he really surprised me as a senior at LSU. He helped shut down Evan Engram when they played Ole Miss. He was guarding him a lot. He had his only career interception in that game. I think he'd be a good player anywhere. One of the new style of NFL linebackers, you know, smaller and faster.
Yeah. Absolutely, especially somebody that could defend the tight end, as you just alluded to with Engram, because that seems to be sort of a nightmare for most defensive schemes and so forth. The defensive linemen, I think, similar to the linebacking core that you just touched on, Jim, where you have a mix of players, some who didn't get significant playing time, some that flashed here or there. The two defensive ends, you've got Deshaun Bauer and Lewis Neal, and then a defensive tackle, Devon Godshaw. Out of this group, I mean, who do you see being drafted number one, and, you know, who may be the best prospect out of that trio?
Well, I think it's Devon Godshaw. And actually, I did three or four LSU mock drafts every year. And the first mock I did, I had Devon Godshaw going to the Giants. he's a guy that I think he translates to either a 3-4 or a 4-3. He can play end in a 3-4 and a tackle in a 4-3. I really think tackle in a 4-3 is his better position. He struggled at the combine. It was kind of disappointing to see really slow 40 time, not very strong. The knock on him is he struggles with double teams, and I don't know what the problem is, because he's got really good – he's kind of a lean defensive tackle. He's not, you know, the big wide-bodied, big-boned with a big frame. He's tall and lean, and he's quick, and he out-quicks a lot of guards. But he's – I don't know what the deal is with him. I'm thinking about maybe the fourth round, unless somebody wants to reach for him in the late third. The two defensive ends, Lewis Neal is just one of the most likable kids you'd ever meet. He says he's going to be a billionaire, and he's not going to make the money from football. It's going to be he's got a great business sense. He's into the stock market. He's half owner of a barber shop in Baton Rouge.
Wow.
But just great deal of desire. But he's 6 feet. He's 265. You know, he's going to be a situational guy at best. I don't think he has that high a ceiling. Tayshaun Bauer, who actually I just got through writing a story about, he's got a chance to be a good edge rusher one day, but he just was behind so much talent at LSU. He didn't get as many opportunities. He only had 7 starts.
That happens.
But he played in the 3-4 and the 4-3, and he's a tweener like Lewis Neal, linebacker / defensive end, and he's been getting props from teams for both. And so I don't know how that's going to turn out for him.
Jim, final question for me. We're joined by Jim Kleinpeter, covers LSU for Times-Picayune and NOLA.com. Jim, you see a lot of great teams play LSU over the course of the year. Obviously, they're in a tremendous conference. Anybody, and it could be an obvious guy, maybe it's a guy that not a lot of people are talking about, that you saw from the opponents that LSU has played this year, where you saw a guy, he's coming out in the draft, and you're like, boy, I don't know why more people aren't talking about this guy, because to me, he looked terrific.
Ooh, well, let's see. You know, you could pick about, I could think of 3 or 4 Alabama players like that.
Rattle them off. What do you got?
I mean, Reuben, everybody's talking about Reuben Foster. Reuben Foster, this linebacker, but I mean, he's maybe the best player, was the best player on that team.
Wow.
But a guy that people didn't talk about was Dalvin Tomlinson. He's a defensive tackle from Alabama, and just, you know, hard to block, extremely strong. He was a state champion wrestler, very humble kid. You know, I think he's going to be a surprise. He'll play in the league for a long time, but he probably won't get picked. He'll probably be the 5th or 6th Alabama player pick.
Got it. Jim, awesome stuff. We appreciate you giving us the time once again. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you down the road, all right?
Thanks, Jim.
Guys, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
That's Jim Kleinpeter. Fantastic job. Good man. Excellent reporter. Times-Picayune, NOLA.com. And you can check him out on Twitter as well. All right, now it's time for your calls at 201-939-4513. And Lance, before we get to him real quick, Nice little group of guys from LSU, as usual, mostly in the defensive side of the ball, which given how the program has played the last few years, much like Florida yesterday, I think we talked about one offensive lineman, and then it was nine defensive guys. So, you know, a lot of SEC defenders there, and we're going to possibly see three LSU players, maybe even in the top 10, if White can squeeze into that top 10 conversation. You figure the safety and the running back will go there, but a lot of high-end talent, and then you're probably going to wait till I think probably the linebacker, Riley, might be the next guy. He can sneak into day two, late second round, early third round, but everyone else is probably going to be, in my opinion, a day three pick.
Or even, you know, undrafted free agents too, which I think are very much in the mix. I mean, even as he mentioned with respect to the defensive linemen, raw, some guys that flash, but maybe invite them in and you see what you can get out of them. I agree. White is that borderline first round pick. I mean, Adams and Fournette, it's the no-brainers. Adams is certainly not going to be there, and Fournette is not going to be there when the Giants are selecting at 23. I think we can eliminate them.
White could be.
No, I agree with you.
I think he'll be. I think that might be a little long for him to be on the board, but he has a shot at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, it goes back to, you know, with the Giants draft another corner in back-to-back years in the first round. I wouldn't rule that out.
Nope.
And what's interesting about White is, as Jim pointed out, and I've read and seen a lot about this, that they used him in the slot. And if there's a position that I think the Giants may want to bolster
depth-wise,
it's a guy that you can squeeze in to play the slot.
I agree. And we've had to talk to a couple guys about different slot players. The guy from Michigan looks like he's going to be a good slot player. Dory Jackson, that's another guy from USC who we're going to do USC next week. He's another guy that, you know, can play that slot spot. So there's a lot of guys, but to me, and again, would I be shocked and appalled that they took a cornerback in the first round? No. But to me, it's such a deep class at cornerback. I mean, I saw an anonymous personnel person. We love the anonymous scouts and personnel people this time of year. A reporter said that he had 20 round one and round two grades on corners this year. That's how good the cornerback class is. So if you have that many guys with, you know, day one, day two grades, do you pick one in the first round or you just wait to get another guy you think can start in round two or three, especially if he doesn't have to come in and do it right away, if you have three guys like the Giants have?
Meaning that the pressure's not going to be on that pick to come in and start day one. So you're why do you grab him in the first round? I get that. However, my only counter-argument would be unless the team just loves him. And that player is separating himself from the rest of the pack.
Right. If they get there and they see they only have one player left from their – let's say the Giants have a top tier of eight or nine players in this draft, or even could be even smaller than that. Maybe they think there are six or seven A-plus grade A studs in this draft, right? And then the next group is 15 strong from, you know, 7 to 21 or 22 or something like that. And they get to 23, and they're sitting there and like, wow, the guy from our first tier of prospects is there, but he plays corner. What do? You take him. If you think he is star potential, even if he's a corner, you got to take him. Because you think he's that much better than the other guys.
I mean, listen, it comes back to value. Yeah. That's what it comes back to. A lot of people say, oh, no, need. No, it's value. Because then if you start to reach based on need, then you waste your pick if the kid doesn't pan out.
And I'll argue this. There's no way to accurately assess what your need is going to be. I go back to the JPP pick. People were confused as all hell. They're like, hold on, we have OC, we got Tuck.
Kiwi.
We have Kiwanuka. Why the heck are we using a first-round pick in a defense if he's not going to play? Well, then all of a sudden, the second year in the league, JPP leads the team in sacks.
Well, and so, Kiwi gets hurt, by the way, that first year, too.
Exactly. So you never know from year to year how your needs are going to change. Who knows? Maybe Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, who's over 30, all of a sudden has an injury-plagued year, or he doesn't play as well because he's a little bit older. I mean, who knows what? Maybe there's an injury. You don't know. That's why when all else is in doubt, you go with the best player, because if he's really that good of a player, you know what? You're going to find a way to use him, and he's going to help your team.
Yes, and in a pass-happy league, you can find ways to put more corners on the field more often than not last time I checked.
Especially the way the Giants have lost corners due to injuries over the year. Yeah, I mean, it's been a position that's been played by it. They were lucky last year that, for the most part, their top three guys, though Apple and Cromartie missed a couple games in the middle of the year, they were healthy.
Well, and remember, what also helped is the dramatic emergence of Landon Collins. See, it was the fact that the corners stayed healthy for the most part, but even when the corners got banged up, your Spags, you're saying to yourself, well, Collins has took such a significant step up that I feel good with the security blanket playing safety. But I always say, you look at the depth chart. You can't just look at your starters. And the depth chart right now is the area on defense that I think the Giants could very well focus on entering the draft.
They have most of their starters.
Yeah, that's right. Why you're in a luxury position is my point. You're correct. In the luxury position where you're not going into the draft saying, well, we need this guy to come in day one. You're in a position where, you know what? We bring in guys, we can groom them, they could have mentors on the team, and then in a year or two, when all of a sudden free agency changes the landscape of the team, you have guys that are ready to step into starting jobs.
The only spots on defense I would consider to be spots where maybe you draft a guy and he goes in and plays and starts right away is linebacker and defensive tackle.
Given,
and that's it.
Of course, with happening with Hankins. Yeah, and linebacker, I think there's always positions based on competition.
Yeah, and especially since there's such a rotation there these days, there aren't that many three-down linebackers anymore. So, you know, he could play a significant role on first or second down or in passing situations, depending on the player that you pick. Again, thanks to Jim Kleinpeter. Awesome job. Now it's time for you. Jay in London on the government's bill. What's up, Jay?
What's up, man?
How you doing?
What's going on, guys?
Doing well.
Doing well, Jay.
So, I'm going to talk about something that's kind of unpopular, and I want to preface it by saying that I remember one of my friends, he's a Giants fan, he's an older guy, and he said that fans worry too much about everything outside the X's and O's. And why I say that is because I think that this kid, Joe Mixon, if he's sitting there in the fourth round, right, the Giants need to take him.
Hey,
and
Jay,
the
look,
reason
here's
why I say that.
Jay, look, real quick, here's the bottom line for me on Mixon. Every team's going to approach him differently based on his off-the-field
right.
stuff. I have no idea
of
how
course.
The Giants are going to look at it. I don't. And I'm very comfortable talking about on-the-field stuff because I know that. I can watch the tape. I see it. I can make my judgment.
Exactly.
It might be right. It might be wrong. I can judge that. There's no way for me to know, you know, whether or not he's really a good kid. Is that an isolated incident? I can go based on what people say about him, but
right.
it's the Giants scouts that do that research. So they're going to, you know, bring in all that information. They'll make that determination. I'm sure ownership will be involved with a situation like that as well, and they'll figure out whether or not they think he's the right type of player for the organization. Beyond that, it's really hard for us to have any other comment besides that. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm hoping, and that's what I was trying to say. That's what I'm hoping, that we're doing a due diligence on the kid. We're seeing if it was an isolated incident or not, and we're not completely, like, just Xing him off the board because of the incident. I just want to know, like, because Paul Perkins is not a change of pace back. He is a back that can actually carry 20-plus carries, right? We need a change of pace. We don't need a bruiser back. I think Paul Perkins could be that back for us.
Well, yeah, but Jay, I mean, I would argue Shane Vereen could be your change of pace back. I mean, I agree with your assessment.
Shane Vereen's always injured.
Well, first of all, Vereen was injured last year. I mean, he's not that injury prone. If you go back to his days with the Patriots, I mean, to say that 1 year is all of a sudden going to define a player, I would disagree with that. They brought in Sean Drone, who is similar to Vereen. He's probably insurance of Vereen, but he's also a change of pace type of back. And, I mean, you have Darkwood, so I don't really think the Giants are lacking a change of pace guy. If you want to make the argument that you'd like to see a guy that could come in and handle the ball 20 times, you know, maybe they could use somebody else, but we're in agreement. I see Paul Perkins as a 17 to 20 carry type of guy.
I agree.
And I don't think they need to reach to find the replacement for Paul Perkins.
I might say 15 to 18, but it's in the same range. You're in the neighborhood.
That,
There's no reason
right.
he can't be your 1A yeah. running back. And to me, I don't think Joe Mixon's a change of pace back. Jay, to me, he's a 20 to 25
yeah.
carrier back guy, a game guy. He's 6 foot and 228 pounds. He's a big boy.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a bruiser.
He's a big boy, man. I'm not telling you he's a plodding between the tackles guy, because I think he's a lot better than that. He's explosive, but he is a three down, every down type of back. And if you listen to the scouts, if that off the field thing never happened, I mean, some people have him in the same conversation as Dalvin Cook and Leonard Fournette.
Right. I'm just saying that if we do the due diligence on this guy and it checks out and it's isolated, if he's sitting in the fourth round, I mean, how often do our fourth round picks hit?
No.
Why not?
No.
That's it.
I feel you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jay.
Got
appreciate
Jay.
The call, and I completely understand your take and your opinion on that.
Well, I think every team always looks into backgrounds on players. I mean, that's a given.
And that's why guys drop sometimes.
Of course. I mean, you look at plenty of examples in recent history, but it still comes back to the team's perception of that player. And if you did a sample size and you went around the league and talked to all 32 teams, I guarantee you, just like they have different opinions on how they think from an X's and O's standpoint, you're going to have different opinions on what people think about players' off-the-field behavior, too. Oh, it's something that is not an issue. It's isolated. Oh, it's a red flag. I'm a little bit nervous about this.
I want to go back a couple years ago. We had a reporter on that covered Nebraska, and we asked him about Randy Gregory, because at that point he was still being talked about as a first-round pick. And he's like, oh, yeah, he smokes, but, he's a good kid. He means well. And you know what? It's a different type of issue that Joe Mixon has, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you say, well, this guy's got first-round talent. He's there in the second round. We got to pick this guy, right? Well, you know what? He hasn't played more than two or three games in the league because of the off-the-field stuff.
Yeah.
Another guy who the Giants selected, DeMontre Moore. He had a guy, first-round talent. But it wasn't, again, a different issue. It was more of an immaturity thing with him and a between-the-ears type of thing with him than it was, domestic violence or drugs. But he's another guy that dropped not because of his physical ability. It's because of other stuff. And you know what? You just get there in the third round, and that's when teams have to be disciplined. You get drooly. You're like, wow, look at this guy's skill set.
It's a carrot dangling out there.
If we can figure out that other stuff, we're going to get first-round value here in a third-round pick. And it's hard to say no to that. It really, really is. Sometimes it works out. Look at the kid from the Chiefs this year who dropped in the draft last year, Tyreek Hill, because of off-the-field stuff.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, it looks like it's like a great move picking him in the middle rounds. But what happens if something happens off the field in the next 2 months? And all of a sudden you're like, ooh, maybe we made the wrong decision.
Yeah.
So it's just hit or miss. It's by the individual player. It's hard.
Well, I think Laramie Tunsil's another good example, too. I mean,
yeah.
He fell not as significant as some other players, but you see those photos, it's right before the draft, you're nervous, and the Dolphins took a chance, and knock on wood, it's worked out for them. So
far.
Correct.
So
it's a
early.
Small sample size, but it at least didn't seem to be a recurring issue from maybe what the photo showcased, and they didn't necessarily, at least from what I've heard, had any off-the-field issues with him, so that's obviously a plus. But when it comes back to bite you and the kid can't see time of day on the field, that's when it's a gut punch, because you're like, we thought, from your take, we thought we were getting first-round talent when we made the third-round selection, but then it turned out to be a waste of a pick.
And that's why it's high-risk, high-reward.
Yeah.
Even the guy like Owe, whose off-the-field issue was injuries. That's not performance-related, it's health-related. And since he's been in the league, he's had some injury issues, and he's had trouble getting on the field. But you sit there in the third round, you're like, boy, when that kid plays, man, he's good. Let's roll the dice.
Of course, yeah. You start to dream, but you got to remain disciplined, just like football players need to remain disciplined.
Yep.
Coaches and GMs need to do the same when you get to the draft. You still need to weigh those pros and cons.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones and say what's up to Jared in Rockland County. Jared, what's going on? How are you? Jared going once.
Going twice.
Jared going twice. Jared, give us a call back. We'll put you right back up.
Man of very few words.
That means Len in Maryland has a couple more minutes. Hi, Len. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? Thank you to Jared for hanging up or whatever he did.
Len, what did you do to Jared?
Give me a couple of more minutes.
What did you do to Jared, Len? Did you go in his house and like stick him in the back of the neck with a needle or something like that, knock him out?
Jeez.
Hey, Lance. Let me just respond. This is not what I really called about, but something that you just said related to Tunsil. Maybe the Dolphins didn't take a chance.
What do you mean?
Maybe that was the right
that?
Pick for the Dolphins.
Yeah, but it's still taking the chance.
I mean, there were red flags that emerged at the last second. I'm sure he was high on their board, and I don't think you need to convince anybody that was an NFL prospect.
I don't want to get too much into the personal issues, although I must tell you that one of the strengths of talking to these guys from the various colleges or listening to these guys from the various colleges is that they really do concentrate on the strengths, and you don't hear much of the weaknesses. And quite frankly, I'm at a point with regard to the weaknesses, the only thing that I pay attention to are injuries, personal issues, and even within the personal issues, maybe Tunsil's transgression is not quite as bad as Ray Rice or Mixon.
Now, Len, I will say this, though, too. My understanding is, I'm not saying this is the Giants that I'm talking about, that there were teams around the league that might have even had Tunsil off their board or way down on their board even before the stuff came out on draft day because of off-the-field stuff that happened before those pictures got released. So yeah, there were some questions about him for other stuff before those photos came out on draft day.
Remember, there was talk about him being the first overall pick at one point, I remember.
Yeah. Oh, no, he was supposed to be.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, things changed.
It all happened within the last 2 weeks of the draft, didn't it? I mean,
it was
up against the draft last year, where the Tunsil pictures appeared.
Yeah, the pictures, yes. But remember, there was other stuff that teams were concerned with. He was at the party, for example, when the kid fell out of the hotel room balcony and into the pool, right? Or whatever that happened on that incident.
I don't think it was a pool. I think he fell.
Oh,
maybe it was a pool.
Whatever
I don't know.
It was.
I don't know if he got a splash on that one.
I'm certainly not. I don't want to defend that behavior. But, I mean, you look at those kinds of things. And within the personal issues, there are degrees. Look, any general manager who says Tunsil was off their board, I don't believe it for a second, John. I don't believe it for a second. May have been off the board in the top 10.
Okay.
Maybe off the board in the first round.
That's fair.
I mean, the transgression was just not – I mean, it just wasn't that great. Now, when you get to somebody like Mixon, I could see him falling out of the draft completely. Although, and listen, I'm not defending anything that Mixon did. It's terrible. Anytime you got pictures, especially, I mean, just – terrible, but it was 3 years ago.
I'm not
trying to cut him any slack. I think that the domestic violence thing is just – it's at the top of the list. I mean, teams are just – they're not going to fool around with that.
Number one, especially in this day and age in the
NFL. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, what I like about talking to these guys is they stay away from the weaknesses and concentrate on the strengths. And
Here's the thing, though.
You won't draft anybody. If you listen to scouts, if you can get a quote from a scout or a pro or you know somebody in the personnel department, I mean, it's a lot of that stuff is negative. I mean, nobody concentrates on the positives.
Well, and here's the thing. Real quick.
One that fits into what I'm talking about.
Real quick.
And that is Cam Robinson. You know, I think Robinson's from what I'm reading. And what I've been able to see, I think Robinson's coming back the other way. I think all this talk about technique and so forth, or lack of technique, which drove him into the late, people were talking about him late first round. Maybe he'll even, a month ago, maybe he'll even slip into the second round.
Yeah.
Robinson is a heck of a football player.
He's good at certain things, but he has some deficiencies.
If he slides to 23, John, Lance, we can't let that go by.
Here's the thing. And I'm being completely honest on Cam Robinson. If you go back and you listen to the Combine shows, we asked almost every one of our draft guys that we get on about Cam Robinson. And they all had different opinions on where he ranked in terms of in the offensive lineman and where he might get drafted. But their criticism of him was all the same. And their criticism of him was simple. And this is what Paul and I said on the show yesterday.
Okay.
He had a lot of issues handling speed rushers. Do you want a guy playing left tackle for you, even right tackle in the NFL, that can't handle speed rushers? That is a huge red flag for me that would scare the bejesus out of me.
Listen, I'll take – John, I'll take that over – somebody coming off a hip surgery.
Okay, and that's fair.
I'll take that over somebody who, 25 years old with the kind of background that Bowles has had.
Or do not pick any of the three.
In Provo, Utah.
Yeah, but
hard to get in trouble in Provo, Utah.
Well, but you know what? But here's the thing, Len. I'm glad you brought up Bowles. But you just said, you know what, the Mixon incident was 3 years ago. So if you look at Bowles' history.
It was like 4 or 5 years ago, right?
How is there much of a difference? If you're going to make that comparison. I'm not trying to call you out, Len. I'm just saying.
There really are degrees to it. If Robinson is there at 23, I'm picking him. And so let me be bold here and say, Robinson's going to go top 15.
I disagree with you.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see what happens.
Okay, you know what, Len? Friendly bet.
One other player.
Friendly bet. He will after 15. Me and you. Friendly bet. He will go after 15.
And I'm saying inside of 15.
Yep.
What are we betting?
That's the bigger question.
Friendly wager. I don't know. I will figure something out. Next time you call, let's solidify it. Give it some thought. It'll have to be something because I only see you at games on game day. So it had to be something game day. Maybe
training camp practice.
Maybe that's right.
We did see each other in training camp.
Yeah, we saw you at training camp coming up again.
Those are the exact day, training camp practice. And so forth, and we'll do it over a bottle of soda, something like that.
Okay, sounds like a plan.
The PG-13 version of a bet.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. All right, now let me ask you about another offensive lineman. Julian Davenport from Bucknell.
He's interesting.
If he's sitting there, a man that size, with the length of those arms and the size of those hands, if he's sitting there at the end of the fourth round, I don't think he will be. I think that somebody that size is going to go earlier than that.
I agree with you.
If he's there at the end, and of course the fourth round pick is like, oh my God, we're going to wait forever for the fourth round pick. If he's sitting there at the end of the fourth round pick and you haven't picked Robinson at 23, what are you hearing about Davenport?
Davenport, to me, you know, Bucknell obviously not exactly a football powerhouse. So he's a guy that has a lot of the physical skills, physical attributes that people think can develop into a good player, but it's going to take some time. You know, he played left tackle at Bucknell, but he obviously played completely different level athletes that he did than he will at the pro level. So I think if you draft a guy like that in the middle rounds, whether it's the third or the fourth round or early fifth, whatever, he's a guy that's going to have to apprentice for a year or two and learn the ropes, get stronger, learn the NFL game, and then, you know, you hope he can develop into a guy that can play either right or left tackle.
I mean, the good news is he's got 4 years of experience as a starter.
I know you're going to tell me that the guy from Hobart last year or 2 years ago was, frankly, a better football player than Davenport. But, hey, he went from – you can't get much smaller than Hobart and started in the NFL the next year.
No, that's true.
Marpet, was that his name, Marpet?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think the argument is that – I think Ali Marpet was an early second-round pick, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, I think he's a better player. I think he had more refined technique. Davenport's raw. So you got to get him in with an offensive line coach, teach him the technique, teach him all that stuff. And if he can figure it out, you know, maybe even in year two he can step in, or end of year one he can step in and, you know, be a backup to a position. But I don't think he's a guy you can, you know, put in year number one and hope he's going to play one of those tackles.
I mean, he's got a great frame. He's got great size. But it's a matter of, okay, well, he succeeded in the Patriot League. Does that translate? I mean, it's the same thing I could say. You know, I mean, I follow the Ivy League. There's a few Ivy League guys that have panned out in the NFL. You don't see a lot of offensive linemen. You always need to weigh. Listen, they're polished kids, they're starters, good backgrounds, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's all of a sudden going to translate to the National Football League.
I'm in agreement with you, Len. One more?
Before we give you time for the last one, I'm in agreement with you that if you get to the fourth round and he's there, I still think that's a very good value pick.
I agree with you.
So no argument there. Who else you got?
Okay. No, this was about the whole concept of change of pace back. You know, when I hear that, the idea of a change of pace back is a great off-season discussion.
Yeah.
it's great to write down on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
But let me give you a scenario. We're in game three, and Perkins gets hurt. You want to change your pace back in the game? You want somebody who can do what Paul Perkins was doing for you?
Yeah, that's a good point. No argument for me. And here's the thing, Len. I think change of pace backs are almost a relic of a bygone age when you had one number one back that ran it 25, 30 times in a game. And then you had David Meggett, who was a change of pace back to do a couple things.
In and out.
Now that you're already splitting your full-time duties between two, sometimes three guys, I almost think a change of pace back doesn't exist in the NFL now. You have just situational guys and guys that, you know, do different things and split time. I don't really know if a change of pace back is something that even exists anymore in the league, to be honest with you.
Well, it could be. Now, if you want to use that terminology and go back to Oklahoma, you know, the other guy, Perrine, is the change of pace guy, not Mixon.
Well, I mean, Perrine kind of took over for Mixon full time towards the end of the year. So, yeah, look, I mean, and I think, Len, that's the thing to me. And thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. Always good to talk to you.
Let me say one thing real quick, John. Coca-Cola, regular Coke, no diet.
No, of course not. Nonsense. Okay. I'm with you.
Thank you.
And we will definitely figure out a second part of that at some point. I will have a proposal for Len next time he calls in as to the bet. If you want to try to come up with something interesting to make me look like a fool.
Well, we will certainly.
Because you love making me look like a fool.
I'm not going to deny that opportunity.
So I will give you a chance to craft this bet.
Well,
okay?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that there's certain limitations.
I know,
and,
I understand
and so
that.
Forth, but I will give it some thought.
Make it realistic, but make it something that could be fun if I'm wrong, which
yes.
You know, Charlie's already going to have to send Fiegel's lobsters. Have you heard about that one?
No, I have not heard about that one.
Charlie Bett. I mean, he's
Maine lobsters.
Yes. He bet Jeff a box of Maine lobsters that Anthony Dabble will be on week one, the 53-man roster for the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, so this is an existing
yes, correct.
NFL player type of
they,
thing.
They made okay. that bet 2 weeks ago.
Anthony Dabble is going to be on the Falcons roster.
Well, no, he already is on the roster.
No,
he
no,
was
but
signed.
He's going to make the he final 53.
He will make their 53
yeah.
on week one.
Okay. Thanks.
And if he fails, and he will.
You know why? Because Charlie is fascinated with players that leave the Giants. He's waiting for that guy that, like, becomes a star so that he could call into this program and say, see, they should have never got rid of him because I saw the potential from day one. That guy had Pro Bowl Hall of Fame written all over him. So I can completely understand why Charlie made that bet. I will be.
He picked the wrong guy, though.
Yeah. No, well,
he picked
I
the
mean.
Wrong guy.
There's been so many guys that Charlie has brought up. I remember having a back and forth on Twitter. He went all the way back to the 60s or the 50s to try to find somebody to sell to me that left the Giants and then went on to become. Forget the Marvin Austin days and all the others. He wants to talk about the obscure guys.
It doesn't happen much.
It does. Well, that's the main point.
The last guy that left and probably became really good, Eddie McCaffrey, who went to the Broncos and had a really good career. Linville Joseph.
And
I guess Barry Colfield, too, to the same point.
But
those guys left because they got offered more money elsewhere. It's not like they chose to just say, you know what, we don't think he's any good, we're going to get rid of him. They knew Colfield and Linville Joseph were good. They just didn't decide not to, you know, re-sign him.
And there's been some other guys that have flashed. For example, Ryan Grant had a decent run with the Packers.
Whatever.
He got banged up. No, I mean, you could throw out some of those guys. I don't think it's crazy to mention that. But for the most part, if you're going to look at the draft picks that perhaps the Giants moved on from.
Maybe Vasante Shianko. He had a nice career with the Vikings after he left here. That's one.
I mean, but other than that, a lot of the draft picks that the Giants moved on from have not panned out. I mean, look at how many opportunities did DeMontre Moore you brought up. I mean, he's been with – now he's with the Cowboys. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But he's another player that has struggled to latch on. And Marvin Austin I threw out went to the Denver Broncos.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these players have gotten other opportunities. We're not denying that.
Well, some guys haven't.
But
like a guy like Ramsey's Barton never really wound up anywhere in any significant way. Darrell Jernigan, no.
Ramsey's – yeah, Barton you threw out,
Beckham.
Of course. Yeah.
He's
been Travis Beckham. Travis Beckham.
Not Odell.
Yes. Yeah.
Odell
is still here. Calm down. Relax. Don't speculate.
All right, everybody. Great job. Thanks for joining us tomorrow. We're going to have prospects with Lance Meadow and Jeff Fiegels, a reporter from Pittsburgh and a reporter from South Alabama, to talk about Gerald Everett, a guy that was linked to the Giants in one of those ESPN mockeries from earlier in the show. So for Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmoe. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to Jim Kleinpeter from the Times-Picayune down there in New Orleans. I was going to ask him why it's called the Times-Picayune, by the way. Like, where does Picayune come from?
Do you know? No, I can't provide that answer. Maybe that should be part of the Len bit. One of you can do the research or the homework. Yes.
Well, he's the former history teacher. That's true.
I'm very disappointed that you didn't ask that question because, I mean, that would have taken the interview to a whole other level. So, well, just a bad job by
I've never heard the word before except in conjunction with the Times-Picayune.
That's the beauty of Google. And I can introduce that to you after the program. We can Google Picayune, and we can get to the bottom of that. Fascinating stuff here.
Well, I'm doing it right now. Because now you
so now we
me.
Have to extend the show more? We can't put the listeners and the fans out of their misery for the next
They will
minutes.
Suffer with me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's not something that you can have to ask a reporter about.
Oh, how about this?
Look at this. The beauty of Google.
Now, apparently, Picayune is a word. It's an adjective. Petty or worthless. So, to use it in context, the Picayune squabbling between Lance Meadow and Paul DeTino at lunch.
Yes.
So, there you go. And also a small coin of little value, especially a 5-cent piece. So, maybe when it was eventually
sold
for 5 cents.
Or maybe that coin is tied to New Orleans in some capacity.
Yeah, that could be true, too. That's a good one.
There you go.
But now, if Jim Kleinpeter was on the phone and I asked him, he would probably know which one it applied to.
He very well could have provided us with some clarity.
I doubt they would. I doubt it would be the first one. They don't want to label their newspaper petty or worthless.
I don't think they would have. But, you know, the fact that I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep tonight knowing that you didn't ask Jim that question.
I will email Jim and I'll report on it next week.
And I hope that you'll know so that we can lead off the program tomorrow with that answer.
It'll be the lead, absolutely.
No doubt. First 5 minutes of the show.
All right. Bye-bye. See you tomorrow on Giants.com, everybody.
Have a good one.